What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Run Your Mouth podcast. Did everyone remember to pay their taxes yesterday? Our United States government, they got two wars to fund, but not actually be a part of. We got to keep Taiwan in check. We got to make sure that Russia doesn't win in the Ukraine. We got to make sure that Israel's got all the resources to keep the ongoing fireworks show going on in the skies. I hope you all of you guys, you got out there, you sat down with your accountant, you paid your proper estimates, you filed the proper forms, and you got your taxes done. I don't know about you guys, but I realized in the morning, oh, it's tax day. I'm responsible to pay my taxes. And like the good upstanding citizen that I am, I like to make sure that I'm making all my donations to Uncle Sam, especially in their time of need. When they've got two wars that they need to fund, I don't want to be the guy being caught by these audits as they sit around and they try and scrape up every single fund that they possibly can. Hey, Uncle Sam's experiencing inflation too. They're sitting around at the Pentagon. They've already cooked the books as best as they can. They're trying to scrape by, make sure that they got every single dollar that they possibly can so that they can buy their overpriced bullets. You don't want it. You don't want to be testing the tax system now. Anyways, I wanted to do the episode yesterday and I couldn't get to it because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I only have the energy in a day to exhaust my brain once. It's a little bit like working out. You know, if you go and you do squats in the morning and you do a heavy lift, that's it. You don't want to be do more working out in the afternoon. And so I was inside my spreadsheet and there's no way. I think I overpay my taxes just in case the IRS is listening to this. I think I'm always over and I'm going to stick to that as we're public on the airwaves. I think I always, I donate even more because I support these wars. I mean, sure, I'll get on the air and say that I don't, but when it comes to actually spending the money and sending it over to the government, I always try and send them a little bit extra. I actually put on the envelope, hey, I know what you're doing over there in the Ukraine. This one's for you, Uncle Sam. You need it more than I do right now. To ignore what I'm saying on the airwaves. So anyways, every time I look back at my spreadsheet that I was working on from the earlier time, there's always a mistake. Oh my God, did I have an epic blunder on the last one? I should have left it there to see if my accountant would have caught it. I got a great accountant. The guy's on top of things, but I had a whole extra zero somewhere. You don't want extra zeros. You know, when things total to zero, that's real nice. When you're like, I don't owe anything, that one's real nice. But you add a zero to a paycheck and all of a sudden you owe money you don't have. That's not a fun way to spend living the last 3 months of your life. But then I worked through the spreadsheet and you're like, oh, look at me. I'm a dumbass. I just added a zero. And then I was trying to just organize the thing for the guy and I burned through all my good juice for the day. You ever do that? You ever have to work on a spreadsheet in the morning? Can you go to a boss if you have an actual job and just go, listen, boss, I fried all my juice this morning on a spreadsheet. There was something that wasn't adding up and I wanted to just walk away from it. But then I said, you know what? We're getting it done. I popped four zins into my mouth and I got that thing done. And now that's it. That's all the juice I got for today. So I can either go home and rest up for tomorrow, or I can stay in the office, jerk off, and eat donuts here. What do you prefer, boss? Because the juice, it's gone. There's nothing else getting done today. So what do you prefer? You want me to go home and jerk off there, or do you prefer I do it from within the office? Speaking about being the world's biggest dumbass, we'll talk about Portland in a second. What an amazing thrill that was. But, you know, I used to have a firm rule against not day drinking. We've already talked about this. And let me tell you, amongst not keeping to that rule is if I'm in the airport at the morning, I consider that night drinking from the night before. If I have to wake up at like 5 a.m. for a flight and then I get into the airport at 6 a.m. after sleeping for 2 hours and I hit that Delta bar, that is evening drinking. Okay, you took a nap in your night and it's still the night. Yes, is it daylight outside? Is it morning? Sure, all those things might be accurate. But when you got a 6.5 hour flight on 3 hours of sleep, you drink as much vodka as they will serve you at that Delta lounge, as much as you can put back in the hour until your flight. Because that's the thing with the morning flight, there's never any line. You could probably show up 10 minutes before your flight and make your flight, but you're still anxious. And you just figure you'll have coffee and take your dump while you're there. So you always get there a little bit too early. All right. So anyways, I left my bag at the airport. I checked the bag and like a total putz, got into New York City, I don't know, 7, 8 a.m, whatever the hell it was. And I just was booking out, trying to get myself some coffee, trying to get myself on the highway so I could sit on 2 hours of traffic. And it hit me in the worst possible way. I had to run an errand on Sunday and I was so sick of like having to move around. I was just like, you know what? I'm not doing laundry and I'll just be out of underwear. I gave up on doing my errand. But And then I realized I left my bag at the airport and I was going to have to go back to the airport and get my bag. Is anyone, this is why I always thought I would, like, cause I do, it's like the second you put me back in school environments, you're like, yeah, no wonder I still kind of do think I'm a dumbass. Anyways, we played a theater. Is anyone listening to me? Usually I get all sorts of action in the comment section. And then some days there's no action in the comment section, even though there's 124 people watching. And you're like, am I just doing this to no sound again? I just like to have one person going, I can hear you. I'm with you. Anyways, we played a theater, which, that's a first. We've played some big settings. I mean, we played Pork Fest. I think that's more overall people. We've done some really cool gigs. We've done some packed out comedy shows. And sometimes I got to tell you guys, I work at this little spot in Brooklyn Tuesday nights. I'm able to get up in front of 10 or 15 people. It's really no pressure. And I get to work on the new stuff. And there's nothing I love more than working on the new stuff. And then sometimes you get up in these big performance settings of like the mat, like really a lot of people. And you're like, that's not what I like to do. I like to work on the new things. But listen, that's not that the gigs that pay money, you got to actually do the jokes that you've worked on. And so sitting backstage, talking yourself up, going, no, I can handle this. I can handle this. And my God, was it a thrill. It was such a thrill. It was a packed house, 500 or 600, just pure, all part of the problem fans. Sometimes the comedy club, you get a mix. You get a lot of our fans coming out, and then you get some people thinking, what the hell is wrong with these people? And so you get a little bit of the what the hell is wrong with these people energy. And listen, doing comedy is like describing sex or eating pizza. It's always good. You always enjoy it. But that was a particular thrill. And so thank you to Davey Smith for reaching such high calibers that we're able to perform in theaters and for allowing me to open for you. And thanks for everyone for coming out. Because when I told the first joke and you just like, I was terrified. You're going out cold in a theater. You don't know how that thing's going to go. You never know how it's going to go. And let me tell you, I've had comedy go really bad and it can go really bad. And you go out there and you just, the first thing, it gets a laugh and you're just like, oh, good, I have him. And then it's just like, bam, 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 strikes down the middle. And like, even just like having to sit back and waiting because it was like a different roar of laughter. It was a huge thrill. Am I crazy? I mean, I know that I'm a crazy person, but is better coffee not just more delicious, but also more effective? Because, you know, I'm out of New York City. I think we got good coffee in New York City. And let me tell you, I'm generally speaking, I don't really have kids or fixed expenses. And if there's one thing in life I just blow way too much money on, it's like good cold brew. I definitely spend, I don't even want to total up the cold brew. My cold brew, my annual, because I don't really go out for drinks. I'm not taking ladies on dates. Spend a lot of money touring, but I feel like that's part of the job. And most of those expenses end up getting covered by the gigs. I'm just saying there aren't too many things that I'm wasting my money on. And better coffee is definitely one of them. And sometimes you drink like lower grade coffee. And it's not just, I'm asking you guys. I'm putting this out into the world. Maybe there's an expert. We'll have an expert on robsnewsroom@gmail.com. Because sometimes you have like worse coffee and then you start feeling all anxious. And then sometimes you have particularly good coffee and it's like Adderall where you're like, holy shit, why am I so fucking focused? And I had this cup of coffee out in Portland. Friend took me out for some nice lunch and we picked up some coffee. And then I was sitting there and I was reading the news and I was like honed in. Like usually my leg is shaking. I start reading the news and then I'm on the YouTube. It's a little bit like what you guys see on the show with the ADD. And I was locked in. And then sometimes you start like just replaying your head. Like, what did I do differently today that I seem to be more, which I guess even that's ADD, of stopping to focus and living in the moment to try and figure out why you're able to live in the moment. But anyways, I realized, I was like, you know what? Maybe it was this particularly good coffee. And maybe better coffee does more than just taste delicious. Is that crazy talk? If you go and you just buy, like, is caffeine just caffeine? That if you went back in time and you just started with the shitty instant coffee and you never stepped up to better coffee and then you never went to better coffee than that. Because here's the thing, when you step up, rarely do you taste something and go, this is so much better. It's when you try and go backwards. It's when you try and go back to the thing you had before the fancier scotch, before the better beer, before the better coffee. That's when you notice the differentiation in quality. It's never when you step up. It's when you try going back. You're like, I can't possibly consume this. All right. That's enough of the nonsense talk. Let's do a quick plug and then read some comments and get into the news. Firstly, Porch Tour, we are nearly done. Porch Tour is nearly complete, August, October, I hope to re-hit more of the locations from last year. Guys, this was a lot of work. It's going to be a pretty epic run, hitting all sorts of new far out locations. I've got two areas I'm looking to try. Actually, three areas I'm looking to target. Binghamton or Syracuse, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and then maybe a Boston, but not as urgent because we're going to be playing Savannah, Georgia. I'd like to do Atlanta the night before. I don't understand. Every time I've played Atlanta, like 70 people have come out, but no one seems to have a porch. That theater guy hasn't gotten back to me. So I'd like to do Atlanta. And the next thing on the list, now that everything is confirmed, is I have to actually sit down and get all the ticket links up. I think the first one that we are going to be doing is out near Miami. I'm going to do a live pod with Clint. I'll probably do about an hour in stand-up. Going to do that one solo and then a live pod. So be on the lookout for that. And then more dates. I'm going to start getting the links up. And then why not plug YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, the people that make all this possible. And now we can get into our episode about the Iran war and Trump. But first, why don't I... Oh, I don't know if this cord is going to be long enough. But let's try. Let's take a couple comments. Let's see what's going on. First comment. I can't hear you. Your microphone's not working. That's fake news. All right. We've got Nick letting me know he can hear me. We've got Oliver going, listening intently. That's what I like. I like people who are her focused. Amanda Dean, listening for my Russian talking points. That's why we get the best information in the game. Oliver saying congrats on the theater. Alan Thickdick, coffee is the same as weed. Better weed tastes way better and also works way better. You see? At least someone's coming through saying the same thing as me. Oliver Klazov, I like the pour over method for my coffee instead of machine. I think it gives a better flavor. That one's okay. Is there a porch in North Carolina? Yes, we will be doing Raleigh, North Carolina, in addition to Virginia Beach and other locations kind of in that general area. If anything, you are too loud. That is good intel. Let me make an adjustment so that we don't have bad audio for the entire episode. Here, I'll pull that down a little bit. I don't know if that did anything. All right, there we go. Let's get into the news because we've got some fun topics. We've got glorious things to discuss. Let's start with the lighter news, which is the spectacle of Donald Trump being back in court. It's the first of his criminal trials. The last one was just taking his buildings. If anything, last one was just trying to take his buildings, and now he's got his first criminal court case. And there you got Stormy Daniels. And I just know that Trump is going to, the first thing he's going to say in front of the jury is, she looked a lot better when I paid her for it, okay? That was a good-looking lady. I don't want to be judged based off of, she's put on some weight. I'm going to admit it. But beforehand, she was very good looking. I want you all to envision that when I spent the $140,000, that was a good looking porn star. Okay. And she said my cum was delicious. The best she ever, I've never tasted it, but I've heard that from other people. People say, so it's not my cum that made this lady look disgusting. I want to make that clear. But here you have it. Stormy Daniels showing up to court. How is there a gag order on this one? How is this a gag order? I want to watch every single moment of this. I want to see Donald Trump when he's got a when they ask this lady all the questions about his penis size. Your Honor, is this relevant? I'll let it proceed. And then they get the guy who actually sits there and he has to draw the whole things and they got to sketch the whole thing out. How are we not going to be able to see this trial? And how is it that we're not going to be able to see Donald Trump every single day on the news going, this is an outrage. I paid all sorts of prostitutes. So throughout my whole career, I never had a problem. Michael Cohen, he fucked up. Don't trust a Jew lawyer. And then here you go. You got Donald Trump having to sit in court, just thinking in his head going, I don't know that I can angrily stare at a judge for that long. I already focused all my rage. I blew all my rage in the first couple of days. You know, Donald Trump, he's got ADD like me. That's why he can eat all these hamburgers and stay as fit as he does. I bet he fidgets. I bet you see him when he's out there. He's just, I bet the entire time he played golf, he twirls it. I bet he twirls that golf club like he's leading a marching band where he's just out there doing his disco moves. That's why he says that he doesn't need to work out, is because I bet he's a fidgety ADD person. And how is he going to actually make it through this court case? And they're going to force the guy to show up to court. You're going to see in the next article from The Hill, not only are they forcing him to show up to court, they won't even let him to show up to other court cases. This is what I said at the beginning. I said it was a two-step strategy. Force him so that he can't campaign. He's got to sit in court and he's got to deal with allegations about being a sexual scumbag, being a sexual creep, being a criminal in terms of defrauding the people of New York and making money by borrowing money on buildings and then paying them back. And then also for January 6th and lying to us about the election. Paint him as a criminal, create your own news, say, look at all the scandals. We've never had a president with this many scandals, and then make sure that he can't even get out there and campaign. This is, I don't think we'll see if any of these court cases end up actually leading anywhere. The January 6th one already seemed to fall apart. The last one, they did take his buildings, but that one is now on appeal, was able to secure his bond. But now the lawyers are going, oh, but you secured your bond from a person that doesn't have the money to pay a bond. So this is still an insecure bond. And then the drama becomes, oh, yeah, but look, I got this billionaire. I'm a billionaire now. Truth Social, except those stocks are already starting to tank. But anyways, back to the court case at hand. Donald Trump is actually being forced to sit through the entire ordeal. This is from The Hill. Arguing before the Supreme Court is a big deal, and I can certainly appreciate why your client would want to be there, but a trial in New York Supreme Court is also a big deal. I'm important too, okay? We're doing a court case here about the fact that you spent money with this prostitute, and you're going to have to be here, and you are going to have to sit through it. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Despite Trump's best efforts, his criminal trial has arrived. Manhattan for weeks, Trump is required to attend the trial. This means that he will spend 4 days a week before the defense table instead of campaigning. His political team has been trying to use his predicament as a springboard for rallying supporters. So you go 4 days a week in the heart of United States election where we're trying to decide who should be the next president of the United States of America. We're taking people out of the race. And instead of campaigning, we are forcing them to sit in court to justify the way that they expense their hooker payments. Now, this is later on in the article and calls into focus what this case is about for those that don't remember. Both transactions were crimes, federal prosecutors alleged. Cohen's payment to Daniels, they said, was made in coordination with Trump and meant to influence the 2016 presidential election. It was as if Cohen personally had handed the Trump campaign $130,000, or about 48 times the legal contribution limit at the time. The $150,000 payment by American media to McDougal violated federal restrictions, corporate contributions, they said. So to give you guys the short, firstly, I've already said they're not doing the Karen McDougal case, because if they did, Donald Trump would be high-fiving the jury. That case doesn't make him look bad. That one makes him think, all right, I like the way you're winning. I like a president who's that calm, banging porn stars of this caliber. But in this case, I mean, there's two reasons why this whole thing seems to be bogus. Firstly, if this wasn't Donald Trump, are we looking into all the payments that Bill Clinton makes to hookers? Have we even investigated what the hell happened with Epstein? We're talking about there's a book of people that were apparently on and off of Epstein's flights, and we're not looking into any of the payments that were made over there. We're not looking into Wexner. We're not looking into that entire field of study. Let's call it the entire expertise of Epstein and who was flying where and what they were doing with underage people. We're not looking into any of that. But when it comes to $140,000 paid for a blowjob, we need to know every detail about this thing. And so firstly, you got a guy and he's a lawyer. And the reason why he hired a lawyer to do it and not just your friend. I mean, if you want to get rid of hooker payments and you just got to go pay someone, you'd think you call up Joey Four Hands and Three Slices. And you go, hey, Joey Four Hands, Three Slices, can you go take care of this for me? And maybe they go knock on something, they suspend someone over a bridge and they make it go away. Or maybe they show up with a briefcase full of cash and they open up the briefcase full of cash. You would think if Donald Trump had a fixer, you would think of some like Hollywood idea of like a tough guy fixer shows up, knocks on a door, makes problems go away. But instead, he's got some dumb Jew lawyer. Some dumb Jew lawyer who he goes, hey, listen, can you legally take care of this problem? And hush money payments apparently aren't even illegal. I guess what made this illegal was that it became as if, I guess, I don't know why Donald Trump is the richest guy ever, but never seems to have money on hand. And never be out of pocket for your boss. That's always bad. It's always bad when your boss is like, listen, I got plenty of money, but if you could just like put this one up front and then put in the expense report for it, and then I'll reimburse you. So for some reason, Michael Cohen, he decides, I didn't fully research this one because the whole thing's nonsense no matter what. The core of the claim is that because Michael Cohen spent his money, that became a campaign contribution because it helped the campaign. Except how do you separate Donald Trump as a person from the campaign? Can Donald Trump just show up in court and go, I told Melania you'd be the last lady I purchase when I went over to Eastern Europe and I bought the finest piece of ass you've ever seen and I paid off the people I had to buy her from. Very nice people. They said they liked my money more than anyone else's money. I told her, you're the last pussy I'll ever pay for. And when I bought her, and then I paid this other lady, I had to make that go away with another payment. I mean, if you're, despite running for president, you'd still have an incentive to make hush money payments if you're cheating on your wife. So how do you say that this was specifically just a campaign finance thing? And also, if your lawyer messes up in the way that he goes about doing something, that it could have been done legally, isn't that just on your lawyer? And then how is your lawyer even going to be able to give testimony here if the guy's a convicted criminal? How is that guy a trustworthy lawyer? All right, here's the last piece of the article I wanted to read. The trial is likely to last 6 to 8 weeks with jury selection, which begin on Monday, expected to take a week or more, which good luck finding a jury for this one, which I guess might be something else that just makes Donald Trump remain in court. And then here's the last thing on this topic. This was from the New York Times. Trump's ex-finance chief is sentenced to 5 months in Rikers for perjury. Rikers is no easy walk of a prison. If you guys ever seen like random footage of YouTube of people trying to throw, they lose their minds and they're trying to throw their urine through the door that never gets opened on them onto a guard. Usually financial crimes, you go to some nice prison and you get to hang out with Tommy Chong and start making plans for writing a book, which I'm referring to the Wolf of Wall Street guy. Usually for financial crimes, you don't have to go to Rikers Island. And in this case, the person who was responsible for what, by the way, Donald Trump might still get off the hook for. He secured the bond. They might reverse it. All the banks made money. But for the high crime of over-evaluating properties that nobody has an issue with other than for some reason the New York government, and that's what we call living in a third world country, which is why make sure, like I said, pay your taxes, everybody. We got two wars to fight. The machine, they need their money. And what they can't have is people running for president that aren't operating as a part of the machine, because if they do, they're going to make sure that all your lackeys have to pay the price. They're going to make it as costly as possible. All right, that concludes coverage of the New York City Donald Trump court case, but it is a fun one, and I'm sure hopefully we'll get some more juicy details. All right. Amanda Dean, it's obvious tactics to try and screw Trump over and not let the people vote for him if they choose to. I agree. Oliver Klausif, I enjoy your Trump impressions. Thank you, sir. Moral government, I love this format. Robbie is on fire. Thank you, sir. All right. And now we've got Speaker Mike Johnson, who is saying that, he's going to separate all the different wars that we're going to try and fund and figure out new ways that he can try and sneak this into some sort of a bill. I don't know, maybe there's some sort of a save the kittens, rehire Fauci, COVID prevention fund. He's like, I got three wars I need to fund and everyone's upset with me and I'm not sure what to sneak this into. But as Israel escalates us towards World War III, we're going to need that money. Hey guys, you can give me the money the easy way or the hard way. You can either just approve it into one of these bills, or Israel can keep provoking Iran into a war, but we're going to be fighting Russia one way or another. So what's it going to be, punk? You want to just give us over the money? Send it over to the Pentagon? Can we just maybe bribe whoever these overlords are? Just what's the amount of money that they need that we could just not have the wars? Can they maybe just come forward and go, listen, for the last 100 years, we've been provoking wars, and we've been killing all sorts of civilians, and we've been making sure that this, that, and the next thing was happening. Here's the amount of money that we need. When does someone just show up like Dr. Evil and just give us the number? Just give us the number that if we made sure that you had that amount of money, you'd have everything you need. You wouldn't even need to print the bullets. You could get out of the war game, and we wouldn't have to have all this death. And so I was talking about how boring eclipses are, which they are, but you know what's fun to watch? The greatest fireworks show of all time. the greatest fireworks show of all time, with two countries don't go to war, but pretend like they're going to war. They play a massive game of freeze tag. Somebody attacks someone while they're on base. Then they go, you're it. Well, we got to respond. They call up the United States government. They go, listen, you know, we're going to have to do something over here. Can you tell us what we can do? And they go, you can send over a lot of your drones and make a nice fireworks show. And we can spend 4 hours pretending like you might do horrible damage to the whole country. And then we can get an opportunity for our pilots to get up there and do a drill. And we could see how well our equipment works. And at the same time, Russia can test our equipment to see how it works. And then they can spend more money on gear and we can spend more money on gear. And I think that'll be a win-win for everybody. And then Iran goes, okay, cool. So if we coordinate with you on exactly how this attack should be done and we do it, are we still okay to pretend like we're mortal enemies after the fact? And America goes, yeah, we're good with that if you're good with that. And so we got war theater here, people. I had people calling me up on Sunday. I had some friends actually went out to Israel and they're like trying to escape the country. They said they felt like it was the last boat off an island. It was like when Vietnam collapsed. So like, are we going to be able to even get out of this airport? And I got other friends. They're all alarmed and they're going, hey, oh my God, have you seen this? World War III is about to pop off. And so here you have the very expensive fireworks show that Iran sent over to Israel. And here's why I was telling my friends, don't worry, at least this round is war theater. Coordinated war theater. Is it stupid? Might it escalate? Of course. But this round, coordinated war theater. So first I was seeing articles from Biden saying he expects, this is from NBC News, Biden, he expects Iranian strike on Israel sooner than later. And what I learned from the Russia war is if the Biden administration tells you enough time that they actually think something's going to happen, it seems like the incident does happen. But then I saw articles talking, this is from Reuters, where it seemed like there was conversations with Iran coordinating what the attack might be. So this is from Reuters. Iran aims to contain fallout and Israel response will not be hasty, sources say. Hey, listen, if we're going to go strike these guys back, we're not going to be hasty with it. We're not going to do something that might actually damage them. We're not going to try and catch them from surprise. Well, we're going to strike them back, but you know, we'll do it in a reasonable way. And once again, these are the people who are building nuclear bombs that want to wipe Israel off the month, and they fund the terrorism in the region. You can't possibly get along with these people. But when it comes to getting them back after you hit their general who was on base and you violated international laws, well, they're not going to be hasty. They're not an unreasonable country. Sure, you've got mortal enemies in the axis of evil. And sometimes they'll act unreasonably when they respond to things that you did where you attacked them first. But that's not that Iran's not going to do that in this case. Let's continue reading. Dubai, Washington, April 11th. Iran has signaled to Washington that it will respond to Israel's attack on Syrian embassy in a way that aims to avoid major escalation and will not act hastily as Tehran presses demands, including a Gaza truce, Iranian sources said. Listen, we're trying to be in a fight here, but like, you know, not a real fight. Iran's message to Washington was conveyed by Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein blah, 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 during a visit Sunday at the Gulf Arab state of Oman, which has often acted as an intermediary between something and something. This is further in the Reuters article. A White House spokesperson declined to comment on any messages from Iran, but said the United States has communicated to Iran that it was not involved in the strike on the embassy. So apparently we do have communications with these people. I just envision some big table where they go, hey, here's what's acceptable. All right, fine. We'll go do that. And we're just watching the coordinated war theater. It's like a play where I guess you could just not send the drones and then we cannot spend the $2 billion shooting down your drones. But or you can give them the specific instructions of what won't cause any damage. And then both sides could go, all right, look at us. We're both playing our parts in the war theater. Iran's foreign ministry was not immediately available to comment. The Omani government did not immediately respond to emailed questions for comments sent during the Muslim Eid. I don't know what the fuck that is. A source familiar with U.S. intelligence was not aware of the message conveyed via Oman, but said Iran has been very clear that its response to the attack on its Damascus embassy compound would be controlled and non-escalatory. Sounds pretty much like coordinated war theater, doesn't it? We're making it clear we're going to re-attack you, but not in a way that does anything or escalates this, but it will be an attack. And so what ended up happening, this is from the New York Times, Iran's missile attack on Israel has ended for now, and virtually none of the missiles reached their targets. And then here was Netanyahu's response. Netanyahu, Israel Prime Minister, wrote on social media, "We intercepted, we blocked, together we will win." Doesn't it almost sound like a post-game press conference? Netanyahu's out there like, "Our team, we had a pretty good idea of what they were going to do. And so we knew kind of in advance what they were going to throw at us. And good, luckily, our defense, they ran good coverage. And with the support of the United States, nothing happened here." And then here was other people, because I was over here. I'm like, am I just a conspiracy theorist saying that this is coordinated war theater? And I think this was from the Wall Street Journal. "Attacks on Israel largely performative, says former senior U.S. officials. Here's the quote from the article. Singh, who is now at the Washington Institute, said the attack showcased Iran's reluctance for direct confrontation with Israel and highlighted Israel's close military cooperation with Arab and international partners. Sounds like they all sat down at a big table and said, here's what you're allowed to do. And they sent it over and they went ahead and they did it. And you would think, okay, fine. Israel got away with bombing a base. They took out a general. They did their coordinated thing to pretend like they're not a bunch of pussies and they responded. Israel gets to go, look, they sent all these drones. We still have to go take out all their nukes. Who knows? You know, maybe I'm the sucker on this story. Maybe Iran is hiding something bigger. They're looking to de-escalate now so they can still get their nuclear bores. Or maybe they're working with Russia and they are actually testing our defense systems. But first look, seems like coordinated war theater. This is another article from the Wall Street Journal. Joint response to repel attack hints at shift in Mideast order. Saturday's Iranian strike on Israel was huge by any standard. Tehran launched more than 170 explosive-laden drones and around 120 ballistic missiles and about 30 cruise missiles. Israel said the damage could have been catastrophic if we hadn't told them exactly what to do beforehand. As it turned out, almost all were intercepted. The sources stemmed from a combination of Israel's sophisticated air defense system and critical assistance provided by the U.S. and other Western Arab partners, blah, blah, blah. All right, moving forward. Whether Israel and its supporters can replicate the performance under the conditions of an all-out war this weekend, salvo from Iran clearly telegraphed in advance was the opposite of a surprise attack is an open question. So, I mean, is Iran a mortal enemy that has the ability to actually strike your country, but they didn't here? Or do they not even have the capability? And if they hear they didn't, it sounds like you guys already have a platform for getting along with them. Iran has started a new phase. It has stopped hiding behind proxies and now become exposed to interceptors. This is what they like to try and claim, is that because of the money that America has sent over and Biden's willingness to send money over to Iran, they've actually emboldened them. And this is the most bold move that they've ever done. Biden should just come forward and go, bold move. This is theater. I literally told them that they could go do that. And then they did the exact thing that I said that they could go do because they're not looking for a fight. And so here was, by the way, if sound doesn't play, this is very short. But this is Iran actually saying, we did our strike back and we consider this matter concluded unless Israel decides to strike us again. Let's give it a listen.
From our point of view, this operation is over and there is no intention to continue the operation. But if the Zionist regime takes any action against the Islamic Republic, our next operation will be much larger.
If that didn't play, it was him saying we consider this concluded, but if Israel strikes us again, we will do something that is much larger. Now, here's where I want to just, before we talk about Israel seemingly going, we're going to strike back. I want to say at the beginning of this whole Israel thing, I said, I stay out of this one because I am biased. And at the time, my bias was that I kind of felt like I'm rooting for Israel. I'm reading these stories as being pro-Israel. And so I don't really want to dig in and research these things because I feel like my Jew lawyer brain is going to come to a pro-Israel conclusion. And so I don't really want to dig into these things. The switch has kind of flipped where I like calling bullshit on things. And I keep kind of, it keeps appearing to me like Israel's lying. And now I feel like maybe I've gone so far the other way where I just look at all these things and I just assume that Israel's being full of shit. If anything, in my own interest in self-security, I think makes Jews in general actually look bad. And I do think that because they're pulling all the Jew weasel tricks while being very aggressive. And I will openly admit, maybe this is the rage of all the terrible Hebrew teachers I had back in the day. And this is my way of getting revenge on being forced to learn that language and all the bad experiences I had learning. And I don't even know how to speak Hebrew. Like 15 years of being in these Hebrew classes, I can read it. And they just make you memorize these charts. And you're like, you could have just taught me it. It would have been actually useful to actually know it. So who knows? Maybe I got this thing entirely wrong. I want to say I'm open to having the thing entirely wrong. Maybe Israel is, I mean, Iran's playing this secret game to try and get their nukes, and they're trying to just go blow it up. But this one really seems to me like Israel provoked it, bombing an embassy, which from what I've read, firstly, I like going after leaders. That's much better than going after the individuals. So, the idea that the leaders get to go, hey, we're in base, and so you have to go attack the soldiers instead of us, I think that's bullshit. But they did break the rules of the game that I guess everyone's willing to abide by. Now you got Iran going, all right, listen, we're gonna strike back. We're going to send all these things. And then they do a strike back, which does seemingly close to zero damage. It's not something we were like, ah, shit, we got to go get them again. And then they go, we're done with this. And so why not, as Biden said, just take the win? Why not just walk away and go, look, I guess our missile defense system works pretty good. Unless you're actually trying to escalate the thing. And so this is the response from Israel thus far as we continue the world's dumbest day game of tag. Israel gauges retaliatory strike following Iran's aerial assault. Tel Aviv, Israel intends to punish Tehran for the drone and missile barrage and represented Iran's first ever direct attack on its territory. I mean, is it even a direct attack if you know that what you're going to do will do nothing? If you know that what you're sending over, the other person can easily get rid of, have you even really attacked them? Is that totally backwards? Like, if I know that you're on your lawn with a gun, and I send, I don't know, my dog to attack you, and I know that you can easily shoot my dog, I guess you could say I attacked you. I guess. Maybe I'm wrong. Israeli officials said, but it faces a difficult challenge of finding a way of doing so. I guess what I'm more thinking is if I have actually like an army that could overwhelm you and I just choose to send the one, it doesn't seem like I'm really trying to harm you. All right. Israeli officials said, but it faces a difficult challenge of finding a way of doing so that avoids further escalation, preserves the partnership that helped fend off the assault, and doesn't derail its war aims in Gaza. All right. Like I said, it's a game of tag. Israel's now it, and they have to figure out how do we strike back that, you know, doesn't force them to then want to go to war with us. Seems like just a losing game on both sides. We're looking ahead and considering our steps that launching of so many missiles, cruise missiles and drones into Israel territory will be met with a response, said the head of Israel's military, Herzi something. And then Iran responded. Iran threatens to attack Israel with weapons that has not used before as it gets military support from Russia. And then you're like, can't we just chill out? Can't we just stop this game of tag before it escalates? And then this is from the Wall Street Journal. Last thing we will read on this. The senior Biden administration official said the attack was at the height of what the U.S. expected and contradicted the notion that Iran gave Israel and its allies time to respond, saying Tehran needed the time to prepare its attack. At one point, more than 100 ballistic missiles were in the air headed for Israel. The official said Iran intended to cause significant damage in Israel. The official said, all right, so you got some people still saying that Iran was actually trying to do damage. And then also you got people talking about how this is actually a sign of Biden's failed policies, which I think is nonsense. All right, let's call it there. Let's take a couple of comments, but before we do, everybody, sheathunderwear.com. It is the summer months. You don't want hot, sweaty balls. You don't want chafing between your legs. If you want to prepare yourself for the possible demise of the planet, World War III, and having to roam the landscape, and you want to be able to pack underwear that if you can't wash on a daily basis, it's still going to stay somewhat fresh. It's going to keep your things nice, cool, calm, and collected and separated. If you got to only have one garment of clothing for the apocalypse, where you got to roam the landscape and every once in a while try and find a river where maybe you catch the sun in the right way, where it's like a sauna, and so your dick has a little bit of hang in it, and then you wash your one pair of underwear. Or maybe you've got a big dick, you spend your whole life pretending like you're washing the one pair of underwear, so then maybe you get the one lady who's out in the woods who was going to kill you in order to take all your shit and maybe eat your corpse, but then she sees how beautiful your penis is and goes, I gotta let that guy live. That's too much of a nice dick for me to possibly kill him. And so the point is, if you want to live in that world, you're going to need sheathunderwear.com. Use promo code RYM. You get yourself 20% off the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. Listen, you want a secure investment. It's in your balls. It's in making sure that they're nice and tidy underneath your pants. You know, preserve them for the future that will hopefully exist as this really dumb game of tag continues. All right, let's take a couple of comments. What do we got going on here? Benny Thajet saying it is definitely a Sheath summer. I agree. Oliver Klosif, I identify with Rob more when he paces and talks with his hands. I agree with you as well. Something I can't read that. Ritter had an interesting segment on Dorr. Hard to know what to believe. Runaway Slav, Robbie's eyelids can't stay still, and neither can he in general. Facts of life. All right, two more comments. So Israel actually does damage to Iran. Iran does no damage to Israel, but somehow Israel has to act. Sounds designed to me. I agree with you. And then the last one, I was just asking if you believed any targets were hit, or was that just bullshit? Was curious of your opinion. I mean, I think it's reasonable that, you know, something got hit. I think I don't even remember the numbers. I think they said that they hit some military station and then maybe killed one person. All right, last one. You call me sir, but I'm a woman. I met you at your show in Overland Park, KC, fat lady in black and yellow. Well, hello. Welcome to the show, ma'am. You know, just put ma'am one in the thing and I won't call you sir. It did like 97% of the people who listen to the show are a nice sir. So I call them good sir. If you put a female name in there, then I'll call you ma'am. I'm not trying to be disrespectful over here. Nice ma'am. That's a good sir. Nice ma'am. First time caller. I'm a lady. Something. I don't know. Anyways, guys, that's today's show. Back, I think on Friday, I got some guy from Australia coming in who's going to tell us some stuff. And then I also leftover call-in show. Once I get all the ticket links up, got to call Andrew, build up that platform because we've got a lot of leftovers to discuss, including, I think I've been seeing this of this sucks so much that you buy yourself a house and you finally feel like you own something. And it's your house and you actually think you're preparing yourself for the future, then at a minimum, you won't ever be homeless. And it seems like that's getting tougher to do as you can't necessarily predict changes in property taxes or insurance premiums. And that you could have done all the homework of knowing, hey, this is a place that I can afford to live. I have enough savings that I can afford to live here. And you then find out, well, you don't really own anything because you're not guaranteed your right to live there because rich people can move into your area and change the taxes, or other variables like changes in legislation can change what insurance companies will charge. And all of a sudden you can't afford the exact thing that was supposed to be yours. I don't know. There's something very disturbing about that. The idea of buying a home is that sometimes you even go, listen, because here's the thing. A lot of people, you think you're buying your forever home, and then it turns out you're not. And you got to pay, 6% to whoever showed you the home. You got to pay a percentage to a lawyer. You're paying points to the bank. And so, sure, the home value might go up, but if you're turning around that home every couple of years and you keep buying new spots, you're going to be losing some of those points to whoever's taking their commission, their spreads, the mortgage brokers, the this, that, the next guy, the home repairs. And so really, if you're buying a home, you want the security of knowing, hey, I own this thing. You can't keep jacking the rents on me. You can't keep jacking this. I own this. This is mine. I have forecasted for the expenses. I'm good to go. But guess what? You don't live in that world. They can change the insurance premiums. They can change the taxes. And boom, all of a sudden, how does that work? If enough rich people move onto my block, they knock down their homes and they build really nice homes. And then all of a sudden my property value goes way up. Does the government then get to come in and go, hey, your home's not worth what you paid for it. It's actually worth this. And then start giving me a tax bill that I can't even afford to live on my own land. That seems like something we should all oppose. All right. My property taxes have skyrocketed considering getting a mobile home. Come on the show, robsnewsroom@gmail.com. Send me an email. I feel like this is a topic that needs more coverage because it's just one of those things that we can all agree is unbelievably unfair. Great show, Rob. He, him. Thank you for the clarification. Some quack. I'm late. Great job in Portland. Thanks, everybody. Like I said, couple dates coming soon. It's the last thing on my I got things on my to-do list. I got to sit down. I got to actually get all these dates up. I got to confirm who the openers are going to be. Got to coordinate which show is going to have menu in. BK, Chris, Kyle, some of the regulars, Andy. On that note, amongst the dates that are going to be on the lookout, because I'm going to be doing a date at Old Man Hustle in Brooklyn. That's the one club in the city I work once or twice a week. Really been great for working out new materials. Going to be putting up some friends on that. And I have no other like New York City gigs that I'm promoting. Probably won't in the near future. So please come out and support that show. Philly, Atlanta, you got them porches. Hit me up. Other than that, be on the lookout for the dates. Thanks for hanging out with us. New episode probably on Friday. Later, everybody.